Hi, I'm Andrew Middleton, and this is the Learning, Teaching and Assessment in Higher Education podcast from Sheffield Hallam University in the UK. Welcome to Programme 10, Digital Game-Based Learning, a winner for UKHE. That is a question. In this programme, we will return to the Higher Education Academy Conference, which took place in Nottingham last July, and the session I ran with two colleagues from the Creative Development team here at Sheffield Hallam, Richard Mather and Susanna Diamond. In the last year, our core team of three, joined by three student placements, have been wrestling with a massive question which we took forward to a discussion session at the HEA conference entitled Digital Game-Based Learning, a Winner for UKHE. Last November, we had run a similar session at Hallam and decided that the format was worth repeating. We presented a gallery of quotations from recent literature on the subject of digital game-based learning. We asked people to peruse the gallery in pairs and discuss quotes that caught their attention. They were then asked to agree a statement or a question to contribute to a more general discussion. When talking about digital games, we tried to keep the conversation broad rather than pedantic and specific. We realised that many of the participants would not regard themselves as well read on the subject, but nonetheless may be curious and ready to consider broaching the topic. We therefore used the terms computer games, digital games, electronic games, video games and online gaming interchangeably. For the session, we attempted to group the quotes under four headings: new literacies, practicalities, inclusivity, and relevance. We felt that they were broadly representative of the key questions that we were trying to address around this topic of digital game-based learning. Here are some example quotes from each heading. Under new literacies, we hear from Randy Heinrichs in an interview conducted by Joel Foreman. He said, "Game players are spending long periods of time immersed in visual environments in which they have to make decisions. They have to think critically. They have to make choices. They have to reflect on all of their actions. Doesn't that sound like learning?" In the practicalities strand, for example, we had Van Eyck from 2006, from an article in Educause Review. "The existing higher education infrastructure is ill-prepared to support digital game-based learning. Given the increase in the popularity, power and sophistication of gaming consoles like the Xbox 360, higher education institutions that are serious about supporting digital game-based learning may even want to change the footprint of one or more labs to be consoles rather than PC boxes." We also quoted from JPG in our inclusivity section. "If we want to take video games seriously as a family of semiotic domains in which one can learn to be literate, we face an immediate problem. Many people who don't play video games, especially older people, are sure to say that playing video games is a waste of time." And under the relevance section, we quoted Squire referring to Piaget and Vygotsky. "Play is undeniably a powerful, pervasive method of learning outside of schools. Indeed, most psychologists would agree that play is a crucial method through which we test ideas, develop new skills, and participate in new social roles. Games allow us to bend or temporarily dismiss social rules in order to try new ideas and identities." So, let's listen to some extracts now, taken from the recording of our session at the HEA conference. Apologies for the quality of the recording. Some people spoke more quietly than others, and I've since learnt that I should have passed the recorder or microphone around during the conversation. But here are some of the people talking about some of the questions and quotes that they came across.
"It's saying that it's challenging to design a game, but actually it's more challenging to design an environment in which that game can work. And that really ties into what I think has been, for me, a theme of this whole conference, this idea of identifying that we need a culture change. And I'm just wondering if anyone has any comments about how do you get, you know, a few crusty old academics out of the lecture theatre to even consider this as a serious step forward, let alone actually do it."
Any thoughts on this?
Well, I think you can do it.
Peter Hart in Bradford. We've now, based on good practice at Sheffield Hallam, we've kind of modelled some ideas of taking a course for development and to get them into to work with academics. I think if you can show academics possibilities and things that have been done and things that they can translate. So we've now got archaeological diagnosis done on a PC, which has game elements. So you're actually giving students, they have to diagnose what this rock is, but they only have 100 points to spend. And they have different tests they can use. And some of the tests are 30 points, some of them are 40 points, they have to make decisions. So by bringing in kind of decision making and enabling them to do it in private so they can make a complete ask themselves.
Just connecting that there may be techniques for managing autonomy if you can do such a thing.
Yeah.
But keeping people heading towards those outcomes. Yes.
Sorry, me again. I'm still struggling at the university, by the way. And I don't know whether it's quite the same, but we've done a tremendous number of very complex goal-directed simulations, which I think we tend to regard as games. And by far the most successful strategy there we found is not to get the Crossfield academics to do it, but effectively commission. So actually go out and say, we want to do something in this area. And there are loads and loads of independent small companies out there who are desperate to be creative and desperate for money. And so if you can give some sort of specification and say, we're interested in a game in this particular area, people will come to your door. Sure, it costs money. If you've got a sufficient volume or a consulting approach, you can do a lot.
Surely if we're making projects for people with these different literacies, shouldn't we ask them? Speak to the students. Do you want stuff delivered on your mobile phone? Do you want, what would the game be like? I mustn't overestimate the sophistication and the cost of the games the students play.
That is really one of the big issues, the cost of doing that. There are companies out there who are very talented, but again, it costs money that many of us really don't have. You've touched on the idea of who owns the environment, the learning environment, the idea of mobile technologies that we want to exploit, the student's mobile phone, and not only hard physical things, but the idea of games themselves. You know, is this something that we should steal from that private experience? From, you know, should we be integrating it in our practice, or are we inevitably going to be too fuddy-duddy about it? Are we inevitably going to ruin the enjoyment factor that we're seeking to build upon? You know, there's sort of questions, many questions around that. Yes.
Pauline Ridley, University of Brighton. I think I want to speak up for the crusty old academics as one, and also as somebody who now works as an educational developer. I know it was light-hearted, but it really bothers me that when we think about teaching students, we talk about starting from where they are, building on their skills. We should be doing the same thing with our colleagues, that crusty old academics, if they're any good at teaching, will be a fabulous resource. They may not be very good at digital games. We may not be very good at digital games. But if they're good at teaching, then actually they're good at thinking about how do you help people to understand things. And I think the danger of setting up some kind of false binary where there's kind of all us, you know, whizzy people doing games, whether it's educational technologists or students, and crusty oldies who, you know, have never made it into the 21st century, is that they won't talk to each other, so the games will be trivial, and the academics will continue sometimes to miss the possibilities.
This conversation 5 years ago would have been about the MTV generation. And they all watch videos. The reason Marshall McLuhan wrote the books that he did was he was trying to teach medieval literature people to watch television, so he wanted to understand where they were coming from. We had educational television, whereas educational television today kind of disappeared. I would take quote 7 and change it. You want to have an educational structure which enables us to take advantage of all the things the students do outside. But it's, oh, right, they're using mobile phones. Like, oh, they're using PDAs. And you're constantly chasing it, you should be able to say their experience outside of the classroom should be something we should draw on and be able to use in the open.
I haven't looked at any of the inclusive one, but I know that on our course for the game design, there's hardly any females on it, and I don't know if you start using digital games, how females can engage with them.
I mean, to echo that, I teach English literature, not design, but talking to groups, I often find that there is a real gender divide in terms of who's interested in games and who isn't. And I think if I made using games a very central part of the learning, that could be a problem.
Yeah, so I just pointed out, Southampton University have got a gaming group, and they had a meeting for women who were interested in gaming, so they're all.
There are, but I mean, if we look at inclusivity as being an issue for several reasons, and certainly the gender one is a big one, other issues are learning preferences, learning styles. For me, one of the things that I feel is that there are techniques that might help us develop engaging environments, much more than looking to dominate the learning landscape, if you like, with digital games. And for UKH, I suspect that that's much more of a useful approach to see how digital games might contribute to learning activity generally, but not expect it to be inclusive. That's where I am, I think, on that.
Particularly, the inclusive methods through which we test ideas, develop new skills, participate in new social rules, bend or temporarily dismiss social rules in order to try and create new ideas and identities. And I rather like that. I think that's one aspect that I come from, that gaming allows you to safely explore and test out ideas in the classroom, and people through role playing can get away and transcend their predefined roles and explore boundaries and push themselves forward in a way that they could be in a traditional teaching format.
Students nowadays come to that only without a conception of a rule book or an instruction sheet. They're used to, through their their school experience and also through playing with technology and seeing media and everything else, to approaching their learning through play and almost trying things out, and they're forming their own models and pathways through the learning. And I think that's the critical thing, rather than the actual technology. It's the actual approach, it's the culture, it's the attitudes we need to inculcate. And that's the most difficult thing for the boring old so-and-sos like myself in academia to actually embrace, because that's so alien to the way that we probably learnt, and probably our models for how students learn.
Is it also about not letting go of our own expertise? Because if we let the students explore, they don't need us. They need us to help us. I would hope to help facilitate it. But there is a danger of letting go of our own expertise to allow the students to do the exploring, to do the inquiry, to do the problem solving. And some of us are very nervous about it.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. Anthony, you're from the Learning Autonomy Circle. Sorry to put you on the spot. Have you got any contribution on that point?
Yes, it is. It is certainly scary to hand things over to students. My own response to number one up here, and I haven't got the sheet to do it, which was, what was that? Students who have been sitting for 13 lectures, 13 weeks for every semester, and so on. Why are we doing it? Well, my comment was, is there a risk of devaluing what the students actually bring and overvaluing what is already there in terms of the lecturer's knowledge, which is not about getting rid of lecturers, but are we overvaluing the wrong stuff?
Mm-hmm. I don't want to sort of conclude too early on this, but there are a lot of conclusions that we're sort of heading towards, I think. The cultural change one, the change of role, the role of the teacher to the facilitator. I mean, it's core to a lot of what we'll be talking about this week here, but it's certainly central, as you've pointed out, to the application of digital games to higher education. Anyone else on that?
Just a response to that. Something that I read recently, and I've forgotten the reference, unfortunately, is that moving, with inquiry-based learning and problem-based learning, and it's moving away from the sage on a stage to the guide by the side. And I think that kind of encapsulates the changing role in this new type of learning.
Sorry to throw in a religious bit, but if you look in the Talmud, it suggests that you do two things when you want to learn. You get yourself a teacher and somebody to learn with. And so that I think that this peer learning has always been important. And surely the role of academics is to set a context so that students may come with these experiences, but you help them to set that within the discipline. And so that their thinking then becomes informed by the scholarship within that discipline, the ways of looking at the world, so that that transforms their thinking.
So we actually need a new language. Yeah. I've been talking about when you started talking early on, I was thinking, well, is it games? Are they simulations? Or simulation games? Does it matter? And maybe we need a new language. So games has got that connotation of being kind of trivial and non-serious. So maybe we need a new thing.
It's also possibly not that helpful for students, because sometimes they will actually resist playing the games if they think they are games rather than learning experiences. Because they actually sort of think, why are you making us do this? And I've had postgraduates doing that, where they think they're above it somehow. And perhaps the language that way, we need to think about, rethink the language, both for our colleagues and for some of our students. I deal mostly with mature, both undergrad and postgrad, part-time professional students who don't, who either might be, feel very uncertain about the digital stuff because their generation is, whereas younger people might not be, or that we, by making it sound like games, you're making it sound trivial, even though we know it isn't.
On the other hand, I've had a student say to me, "Ball learning's not meant to be fun." So it's not just the academics,
it's the
turning
it is the students as well. Yes, I wanted to put a lot on that because you know, we talk as if games are what students want, and I know that I don't enjoy competitive games and shoot 'em ups that my colleagues will play in their spare 5 minutes and love it. I think that there are elements of game approaches that we need to harness the imagination and exploring and trying things out, but not maybe give the impression that it's all about, you know, it's got to be competitive, it's got to be winning.
For me, the distinction between games and play is slightly different. I don't think games are just about winning. You can have games where win-win situations are actually what's key. For me, the game sets a structure in which the play takes place. And so there's almost sort of structure and agency thing. So you want to create games which give the maximum ability for people to play within them. I think in question even perhaps the rules.
We're going to just wrap up with a little bit of voting. Get your red and greens ready. And these questions have been worked out. Okay. New literacies heading. I think we'll all vote on everything here. But is UKHE willing to converse with the neo-millennial learner? In other words, change our practice to exploit such technologies. Any reds? Yes, we've got a red and another red. But generally, I think we're open to looking at what we ought to be moving towards with that one.
Is that the room and the people at this conference?
Yeah, well, that's always a difficulty, isn't it? I mean, I was having a discussion with someone earlier about, you know, inviting people in. You know, again, it's preaching to the choir. But, you know, you've got to start somewhere. But interesting. There might be a body to legitimise it. Okay, practicality. Can we realistically deliver and sustain useful digital game-based learning across the curriculum within the next 5 years? Can we deliver it?
It's a sea of red, if everyone saw one.
Yeah, it is.
Money.
Money.
I'm an evangelist.
Can we do it, Peter?
Yeah, we can. Yes,
we can. Inclusivity. Will too many people feel left out of the learning based upon digital games based learning? So, will people feel left out? Green for yes, they will feel left out. Okay. Actually, not too well worked out question. Okay. So, in terms of inclusivity, it looks as though we're not sure. And we could go either way at the moment on that. But it's obviously a consideration for us, I think. Relevance, and this, you know, for me is the key question. Should UKHE be dabbling with this digital game-based learning? Yes. Okay, well, that's more optimistic. So we should take our lead from what we've concluded with that one. And the final question is basically the same question. Yeah, actually, no, I read it. But the title of our session is digital game-based learning a winner? And I think it is the same question to the one we just voted on.
Winner
for UK higher education. So I think there's a lot of reason to leave this room and have further discussions about some of the real issues, especially the cultural ones, and certainly the practical ones, where we got a lot of red. But yes,
I hope you've enjoyed that. I've certainly enjoyed listening to your comments. So thank you very much for taking it.
A full set of references to the quotes used in this podcast and in the session itself can be found in the show notes for this podcast, and I will give the address of that at the end of this program. At Sheffield Hallam, it still feels as though we've opened a can of worms. We found the HEA session useful. There are people in UKHE who are clear about digital game-based learning and how it can be applied, but in general, this session confirmed for me that most people are not clear, though ready to consider the new ideas. We are not clear about how academic practice should change, how we can manage the practicalities of implementing, integrating, and sustaining games meaningfully, whether games trivialise higher education, and whether the development and application of games can be inclusive and cost-effective. It is likely I will return to this subject, given that this year our team has decided to focus its continued exploration in a handful of manageable projects. We are holding our team meetings occasionally in Second Life. We are building widely applicable game templates, and again plan to work by matching student games developers to academic clients. If you have any ideas you would like to discuss in this podcast, then please do contact me at lta-podcast@shu.ac.uk, or you can leave an audio message on the show notes website. Just plug in a microphone and go to the show notes at http://lta-show-notes.blogspot.com. Thank you for listening.